Rod Hundley with Ron Boone. 6 minutes and 33 seconds left in the first half. Jazz ball, they lead 47-25. John Stockton needs one assist to break the record that he's now tied with Magic Johnson of 9,921 assists. Stockton with the ball front court left. He looks to Karl Malone. He's got him low. The mailman jumps it. Shot up. It's in. He did it. He did it. John Stockton to Karl Malone. John Stockton with 11 assists. They're on their feet. A new NBA assist king of the NBA.
Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. We'll take a moment as we slide into this episode, remembering a little Hot Rod Huntley. I'm Alan Jedi Zog. On the other side, John English, the Germs guy. The Jedi and Germs show is brought to you by TornBySports.com. Torn by Sports. Local teams. Local coverage. Real fans. John, we didn't get a chance to talk last week, so I thought fitting that we start this off by remembering the legend, Mr. Hot Rod.
Yep. Yeah, I moved to Utah in 1989, and that's how I instantly got to know the Jazz was, listening to him on the radio or watching him on K-Jazz. And he was just as part of the Jazz as anybody else. He was as big a staple to the team as Larry H. Miller or Jerry Sloan. And, he knew when to hang it up, and he knew, he also was, respectful of Dave taking over the job. He kind of hung it up, and then he'd just kind of come back in town once or twice a year. But other than that, pretty much let, Dave do his own thing and grow himself on the radio.
Yeah, he did. I like you. I mean, I kind of jumped into the Jazz as a Jazz fan around the same time that you moved to Utah. And Hot Rod painted the picture perfectly every night. I've said this multiple times over the last couple weeks. I didn't even have to be at a game. I didn't even have to watch a game. All I had to do was listen to Hot Rod, and it was as if I was there. I think it was... can't remember who said it. I think it was Ron Boone that said that Hot Rod had a way of knowing the plays before they even happened. He had a feel for the game such a way that he literally could call the plays before they even happened. I mean, it's unheard of that you could even do that. And for the longest time, it was the simulcast, both radio and TV. It was Hot Rod on both. Until the mid-2000s, early 2000s, when they switched over and went with him only on radio. But it didn't matter. I could listen to him, and I was there. And he made it all perfect. So, you know, I'm with you. He was the way he exited. And truly, I think that David Locke and Ron Boone now honor him in the way that they do things on the radio. David has his own personal, way of doing things, but that doesn't take away from the fact that I think he handles it well and honors him in everything that he does. So that's what I'll say.
Okay.
All right. So let's jump into, we've got what, 5 games left?
We have 5 games left. We're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So I would say the most important thing about these last 5 games is what it will ultimately mean for our position in the draft.
And yes, how much of a difference can these last 5 make in draft positioning, really? I mean, if the Jazz, let's just say the Jazz win all 5 of them, where does that put them?
They would be 12th.
12th.
Actually, if they win all 5 and Phoenix loses out, then they would get the 13th pick.
Wow.
So there's still a chance they could wind up with the 13th pick. I think they're going to finish 12th. if they lose the majority of the remainder of these games, then it's possible they could slide up to 11th or 10th if the teams in the East continue to compete. You have Paul George, who's back for Indiana, so Indiana's going to try to get back in the playoffs. Miami just having injury after injury, so I don't think they're going to be able to climb back in. Charlotte's pretty much fading away. But you have Boston and Brooklyn for the 7th and 8th spot, and then you have Miami and Indiana, who still have decent chances of getting in. So maybe that'll be enough motivation for them that they can finish somewhere around 37 and 45, 38 and 44. And if they all work like that, then it's possible the Jazz can move up a spot or two in the draft. I would say 12th is likely. It would be just as likely that they could tie for 11th and then they do a coin flip. But I would say the best mentality for the team is just to assume they're going to have the 12th pick. And whatever happens in these last five games, great. They have Sacramento tomorrow night, or tonight, depending when you're listening to this podcast. And I want them to get that win just because I don't like DeMarcus Cousins, and I just would like to see them beat the Kings again. But then the last four games are against Western Conference teams with something to play for. So that'll be rough. They're trying to win those. I could see them probably going like 1-3 those last four games. And if the Jazz decide that they're going to shut any players down, just give a lot of rest to their players the last few games, then, you know, who knows? They could wind up losing the last four games and just being content with a,
let's,
what would that be, 36-46 record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a great record.
and it's right.
Based on what they did last year, then an 11-game improvement when they weren't trying the last couple games. So that would be great.
And I would hate to, toot the Jedi and Germ's horn. Okay, fine, I will. But we both said 36, 37 wins to start the season. So, hey, if they win 36, we were good. We're good with it. So, let's talk about the last four games, though, because after Sacramento, the Jazz have got Houston, they've got Dallas, they've got Portland, and who's the fourth game? Pelicans, isn't it?
Pelicans again?
No, I don't think. Never mind. Maybe it's not the Pelicans.
It's hang on.
Let me. I had it up. Memphis.
So, okay, we have home game against the Kings and then a home game against the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies are going to be motivated. The Grizzlies would like to move up to the 2 seed. They're at the 3 seed right now. But whoever gets the 2 seed is going to face Dallas. And whoever gets the 3 seed is going to face the Spurs. And Memphis might feel good about how they match up with the Spurs, but I don't think they should be that comfortable with how the Spurs have been coming on so strong lately. And I would think they would rather face Dallas first.
Well,
so they're going to be motivated.
And this is something I wanted to go over. Memphis, their schedule might be the toughest of all the top five teams going down the stretch. Because after they've got, let's see, they got New Orleans tomorrow, then they got the Jazz, mm-hmm. then they're at the Clippers, they're at Golden State, and they close out at home against Indiana. I was looking tonight before I came. The Spurs are 2 games out of the 2 spot in the West right now, 2 games back of Houston. And the Spurs and Houston are about to have a home and home that could very well decide not just the division leader, but the Spurs, man, if they're coming on, they've won 18 of 21. I could very easily see the Spurs end up at a 3 seed. And if everything falls right, the 2 seed, suddenly watch out.
Well, that's a good point. The Spurs are sitting at number 6 right now, but they've won 8 in a row. They're on a roll, and it is that close from 2 to 6. Houston right now has 24 losses. The Spurs have 26. And, you know, there's a bunch of games going on tonight that's going to affect some things. And, you know, going to who the Jazz are facing, Memphis is going to be facing a Pelicans team that wants to hold on to the eighth seed. They have it right now.
Yeah.
And with the Thunder playing the way they're playing, all they have to do is play competently and they'll be able to be in the playoffs. And if they're in the playoffs and you got Anthony Davis in the playoffs, you got Monty Williams, who probably saved his job, much to the chagrin of most national writers. But, you know, if he finally gets them in the playoffs, maybe Monty Williams stays there as coach next year. And the Thunder just lost, what, 5 of 6 or 6 of 7. They're just unraveling. They lost their best defensive big, and no matter how much scoring Cantor does, defenses just fall wherever he goes. And now it looks like the Thunder are going to miss the playoffs, and that means the Jazz pick, instead of coming to them in 2017 at the earliest, it'll be 2018 at the earliest, which makes it not quite as valuable a trade asset as it would have been if Thunder were going to the playoffs this year.
Yeah. No, yeah, and that's where, no, I agree. And so there's a lot of scenarios. Basically what you're saying, there's a lot of scenarios that go down to the end of the season. The Jazz's pick from Oklahoma City, where are the Jazz end up in the draft, and then you've got a wild, wild west of teams. If I were to predict, I think the Pelicans will hang on to that eighth seed. And then if I were to predict from there, I think you're going to see the Clippers, probably with the easiest of schedules, take that two seed. I think San Antonio, I think San Antonio can beat Houston at least once, if not twice, especially where they've been playing. And suddenly they'll inch their way into the three seed, and then you'll have a matchup of possibly Memphis and Houston in the first round, 4-5 matchup, which could be very interesting and kind of fun to watch. And they're both in the same division as well. So am I spelling this out right? Can it really happen that way?
Well, the Clippers and the Spurs are the two hottest teams in the West right now. And they have the exact same record as well. And I think Clippers would have the edge in a tiebreaker.
I agree.
So, yeah, you could end up with Warriors 1, Clippers 2, Spurs 3. Blazers would be 4 because of the division thing, but they probably wouldn't have home court advantage against whoever's number 5.
And that would be either Memphis or Houston at 5.
That's like the dumbest rule, I think, is if you're the division winner, you get an automatic top 4 seed. But if you don't automatically get home court advantage, then what is the point of getting a top 4 seed?
I agree.
I just think if they really want the division title to mean something, then they should have home court in the first round. But then if you have really crappy divisions, then, you know, that might not seem fair. And if that's the case, then just get rid of the division winners.
Like those 4-5 matchups that the Jazz had against Houston back with Deron Williams. Houston had the better record, but the Jazz were division leaders, so the Jazz were the 5th seed. Or 4th seed, whatever it was. But
Jazz
Houston
were the 4th seed, but Houston had a better record, so they didn't have home court advantage, so they might as well have been the 5th seed.
Exactly.
There's no point in calling yourself the 4th seed if you don't have home court.
Agreed. I also think that 4-5 matchup, though, is a lot closer, and it's proven to be that, than any of the other matchups. It's you've got two teams that are interchangeable at either of those positions because it's right there in the middle of the playoffs. So right there in the middle of the playoff race.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be a top 3 seed. You want the higher seed, the better, because you're supposed to be going against worse teams. Now, if the Thunder, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, the Thunder are going to be this really, you know, juggernaut of an 8 seed, but with all the injuries, you know, that was said with the belief that Kevin Durant would be back and some of these other guys. With Durant gone, Ibaka gone, they're just kind of falling off the map. And even though Westbrook is able to put up like 35, 11, and 10 games, they're just fading. They'll probably finish, what would you guess, like a 44-38 record. Miss the playoffs by a game or two.
Sounds about right.
This might be the year that gets Scotty Brooks fired, even though it's not really fair because he had so many injuries.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have been saying that his coaching is just unimaginative. And he was great to finally give them a winning culture, but now it might be time to get a new coach who could actually bring in the title.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. It's a sad thing, but I can't dispute anything that you're saying there. So, and I realize we got off topic a little bit. So with the Jazz going down the stretch, Devin put together morning shoot-around this morning, said he called tomorrow night's Jazz game against Sacramento a win. He said the game against Memphis called it a loss. Am I right, Devin?
Yeah.
And then you said the Jazz would lose to Portland too, didn't you?
I did. I think both of those games the Jazz have an opportunity to win, but at this point in the season, the Blazers and the Grizzlies both need these wins for their playoff standing. So I think they're going to want it more, and especially Portland having home court. I just think this might be where Quinn gives Gordon a rest, gives Favors a rest, sees what these young guys can do, and Jazz let a couple of these go, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing either.
No. And if that's the case, they're going to win 36 games, because I think if the Jazz lose both of those games, Jazz will likely lose the Final Four. John, Final Four in a row probably?
If they decide to rest players, I think the Memphis game will give us an idea, because I think they'll try to beat the Kings, and I think they'll try to beat the Grizzlies, but if we see Gordon play 7 minutes and not come back in the first half, then you will know that they're going to lose the last four games.
Right.
And that's not necessarily terrible, but it would be cool if the Jazz could at least finish with a winning home record this season. I think that would be a nice statement. They're 19-19 right now. Let's say the Kings could play with heart. Who knows? There have been a few games the Jazz should have won that they didn't. So I'm not going to say the Kings win as a guarantee. I really hope they win. I'm going to be there in person. But, if the Jazz finish 37-45 or 36-46, but if they have a 21-20 home record, then I think that would be a nice little victory. That would be something to hang their hat on going into next year. And they already have a lot to hang hats on this year. They've proven all they wanted to prove this year, I think. And the foundation's there.
For me, I'd say they've overachieved this year. I didn't have them winning as many games as you guys did. I was expecting them to be down maybe around the 30 mark. But, you know, with the last four games coming up, I can't see them not trying to get a win at home against Dallas. To me, that's a game that I don't see Quinn resting his guys just because it's the last home game. I think they want to go out and give the home crowd a show. So, you know, I'm going to take them to win that game. But
that's
the other
true, and Dallas is pretty locked in at the seventh seed.
Yeah.
So Dallas might be resting Dirk.
So, good point.
You know, that's kind of how I see the season winding down for the Jazz, getting that last home win, getting the win against Sacramento, but dropping those other three.
That last win against Dallas might be an opportunity for the Jazz anyway, because they've played Dallas and lost pretty badly every time they've played him this season.
Well, the last one was close.
Yeah, that's true.
The last one, I think they only lost by five. That was the beginning of their stretch where they would just have an awesome record if they were just making free throws, but they missed 12 free throws against Dallas and lost by five. It was something like that.
That was that 19-1 versus 14-6 stretch that you were talking about.
Yep, that Dallas loss is in there.
Okay, and so let's switch gears slightly, and I don't know how much you want to talk about the East playoffs, but I wanted to go back to something you said. You were talking about Indiana possibly not making it. I'm going to call Indiana my dark horse in the East, because Paul George is playing, he's back, He's getting warmed up. If he puts together a string of games here as they finish off the season, they could end up as that eighth seed and could provide a bit of an intriguing matchup against Atlanta in the first round.
They would be intriguing, and they are coming on strong. Brooklyn has been playing weirdly strong, and they are looking pretty good that they'll be one of the teams that makes it, you know, unless something else happens. But Brooklyn is playing with a lot of confidence. Indiana, now that they have Paul George back, they're playing at the Knicks, at the Pistons, a home game against the Thunder, a home game against the Wizards, and then away at Memphis. That Memphis game will be tough, and depending on what Memphis wants to do, I think that'll be rough for them. But those other four games are very, very winnable. And let's just say they win four of those five, then they'll finish the season at 38-44, which is very much a 8th seed record for the East. They could probably lose another one of those games and still make the 8th seed.
Well, the question would be Boston. Boston's the key there. You talked about Miami, but Boston's got a slight hold on that 8th seed. I don't know that I'm convinced they...
Now,
what's that?
Yeah, if you take the 8th seed, look, if we just assume Brooklyn's going to make it, and so the 8th seed is between Boston, Miami, and Indiana, Miami is the one I instantly eliminate. Boston, they still have to play the Cavaliers twice. And they have the Raptors. So Boston's schedule is not that great. They're away at the Pistons and they're away at the Bucks. You know, Pistons, they should win. The Bucks, you know, the Bucks are in the playoffs. The Bucks are going to want to have decent position. The Bucks don't want to accidentally drop to 7. I mean, the Bucks right now would be playing Chicago, and I would think they would feel pretty good about that. They would much rather play Chicago than Cleveland.
I'm not sure.
The Bucks are going to want to keep that 6th seed.
I'm not sure anybody wants to play Cleveland in the first round, period.
No. No one does. Brooklyn is probably fine to play Cleveland because, you know, they're not going anywhere anyway. But, you know. Lionel Hollins is a good coach, and they might be able to get a game or two win somehow.
Right.
But I would say that it looks more likely that Indiana makes the 8th seed rather than Boston.
Which, again, provides an intriguing 1-8 matchup in the first round. You know, yeah, sub 500 team playing against the second-best team in the NBA, where whoever thought that we'd say the losing record against the second best team in the NBA could end up being an upset. I'm not saying it will, but there is upset capabilities there for Indiana, a healthy Indiana team.
Now, they'll lose the road game against the Cavs, but then they'll have a home game. And at that point, the Cavs might feel secure in the 2 seed. Like, if the Bulls lose one more game, Cleveland's guaranteed the 2 seed, and they could rest all their players the rest of the way.
Right.
So, you know, that's a possibility. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they start resting one or two stars at. Like, we see Kevin Love rest next game, and then the game after that, Kyrie sits. They could do something like that.
Right. The playoffs are intriguing. It is the East. They're horrible. We don't have to spend as much time on them as we did the West. I just wanted to bring it up is all.
Yeah, if we got rid of conferences and we just had a top 16, then you'd be talking about Phoenix fighting Milwaukee for position.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma City would be in it. It would just be a matter of who are they going to face and, you know,
right,
all kinds of stuff like that. Utah right now, you know, tied for the 8th seed in the East, and they're 10th in the West. So it's just another year. The stat 2 days ago, I don't know what it is now, but the stat 2 days ago was the West has won 58.7% of the time they play the East.
Wow.
Which is just typical. The West has just been dominating the East, and it's a it's the same story every year, and hopefully it'll lead to some changes as far as how the playoffs are going to work, because the East is just bad every year.
Yeah, they are. So, all right, what else you want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about some individual players.
Okay.
Hayward, we're probably going to see get some rest soon, and that would be a good thing, because I don't know if you've noticed, but Hayward hasn't been playing that great since he missed a couple games.
Yeah.
I should take that back. He hasn't been shooting that great. His play has been good, but his shooting has been off since he's come back. His last two games, Hayward is 9 of 29. In fact, let's just look at his 3-point attempts. In the six games since he's been back, he has hit 8 out of 30. I'm adding that up, right?
Wow.
31, 8 out of 31. So, you know, it might be okay for him to just go ahead and take some more rest.
Yeah.
And then kind of get his back feeling better, and then he'll be able to come back strong next year.
Yeah, I agree. And he's taken all the load this year. I like the way he's handled it. It's been very well, but I wonder if some of his injury problems over the last couple of weeks has just been the drag of the season, and where he's been, you know, carried the team on his shoulder at times, is finally dragging on him a bit. So I'm with you. Resting him probably isn't a bad thing at this point in time.
No. Let's move and talk about Trey Burke.
Okay.
I've been looking at his numbers and comparing him to last year and see if we can see any improvements. And we actually can. His defensive rating is much better this year compared to last year. Last year, he was a 115. This year, he's a 108. So that's good improvement. His value over replacement player, last year, he was a minus 0.3. Now he's a positive 0.1. That's a little better. He's still the same in a lot of areas. I mean, his per rating went from 12.6 to 12.9. That's not much. If you go by his per 36 minutes, you can get a little better idea of his stats. His scoring's up a little, but so is his shooting. His rebounds are about the same. His assists are a little bit worse, but his steals are a little bit better. So overall, I'd say we've seen baby steps improvement. But if he wants to be a long-term NBA player, he's going to need to demonstrate a greater amount of improvement in his third year compared to his second than he showed in his second compared to his first. And his shooting absolutely has to improve. He can't have another year where he's shooting, you know, 37% overall and 31% from three.
I think that third and fourth year is where most players see a significant jump anyway, isn't it? I mean, am I wrong to assume that?
No, I would say that's true. I would say on average, your biggest jump is between your second and third year.
So it's Trey's due time. That's really what it comes down to. It's his time. We either see that jump in improvement or we don't this next year. I got another question to throw at you. See, I'm a Trey Burke apologist. I'll admit to it. And people know that based on our podcast, because you and I have gone back and forth all season long about it. But I want to throw in, I wouldn't call it devil's advocate, but rather an alternate point of view on Trey's defense. And I want to see where you think of this. I've had somebody at work give me this thought, and I'll have to agree part, but I've also argued on the opposite of it. And that is that Trey is a better defender because of Rudy Gobert. True or false?
True.
Okay.
No hesitation.
All right. And that's, you answered it. I don't even think there's more. What's that?
Rudy is so dominant in the paint that all the other players on the court can feel more confident about playing closer to their guy because they know they got Rudy back there.
Okay.
And it's affecting the way other teams are playing. Other teams are that much more hesitant to go to the paint, and that hesitation is making it easier for perimeter guys to stay with their guys. I mean, Rudy is just, he's floating all boats. And yeah, that's part of the reason Trey's defense is better, but I don't want to take anything away from Trey.
Right.
I think a 7-point improvement in your defensive rating is great.
Which is where I was getting back to. And that's, I'm glad you came back with that, because in no way do I want to take away from what Trey's done. Like I said, I'm a Trey apologist, and I believe he's better because he's better. But I wanted to set the record state and have you do so that, yeah, Gobert has something to do with that as well. I wonder how much of Trey's offensive game, the slight improvements he's had, also might have something to do with that. And it's interesting. I go back to, I think it was a post-game interview with Gobert a couple months ago where he talked about the fact that he keeps telling Trey to keep shooting and to keep going around his picks and use his picks and things like that. And I don't remember the exact quote, but it was interesting to hear Gobert talk about the fact that his offensive mindset, part of that has been to try and provide picks for Trey to get him free and opportunities for other players. So I think the Jazz's offense maybe finding some different niches and improvements might have something to do not just with everybody, but with what Gobert is providing on the court as well. Would you agree?
To a degree. Trey's still missing his shots. So it's great that Rudy's encouraging him, and the plays they run would be great if these guys would hit their shots more consistently.
Right.
I mean, if Trey was shooting 42% and 38 from three, that would change everything. You know, I mean, the offense would be that much more reliable on him, even just improving to that, which would be a big jump compared to what he's doing now, but it would put him on a more normal level with point guards in the NBA.
Yeah.
The way the plays are designed, yes, that would be great and that would work. And, you know, now Trey's got to do that next year. He's got to be able to hit those shots. If he can hit those shots, all of his teammates can trust him. And his teammates do trust him. It just sucks that he just has these spells where he can't hit anything.
And but I want to.
If he could get his shooting up there, then that would add like 5 or 6 wins.
And I want to go back to something you tweeted out on the Jedi and Germs account last week, where you talked about Trey Burke's shots and his shot selection. And you even went as far as to say that it all doesn't fall on Trey either, that a big part of that problem is the offense and where the ball ends up in Trey's hand, which is usually at the end of the shot clock.
Yes. Yeah. In Trey's defense, he gets the ball in the last few seconds of the shot clock, and so he has to throw up tough shots. It's not like he runs down the court and then chucks up these shots with 18 seconds to go. He is trying to get the offense going, and he's passing around. You know, sometimes he might dribble too much, but often he'll just find himself where at the end of our 24, we still don't have a shot, and the ball's in his hands. He's just got to shoot it,
which and, doesn't help the percentages.
Know, it doesn't.
So
now he has actually been out, and he's questionable to return tonight. They might, if he's questionable, actually, I think it's probable. I think I saw that it was probable. So he'll probably play tomorrow and that'll be good for him. And we'll see how he feels. But it probably wouldn't be a bad thing to just let him know, go ahead and shut it down. We'll let Bryce Cotton play and you just work on recovering in the off season. There are a few guys on this team that could use that.
And before you jump into any other players, I want to point out, you were talking about resting guys, resting Trey if they have to, resting Hayward. This might be a good opportunity that the Jazz might be using to put some of these players like Cotton, Cooley, other guys out on the court because they've just signed them to contracts and they now become eligible trade bait options. You put them out there, have them play. Not only do their contracts look very appealing in a trade, but now they look like appealing players in a trade. Am I right?
Yeah, and they called up Grant Jarrett again, so yeah, he'll probably see time tomorrow.
Yep.
But yeah, all of that is to make them a little more attractive on draft night.
Yep.
The main attraction is that they're unguaranteed contracts, so I don't know how much it matters what they do on the court. We didn't waive Grant Jarrett. We kept him, so maybe that's something.
Right.
As far as what they saw in him. But, yeah, most of these guys are not going to be on the Jazz July 1st.
This is true. I'm assuming one of the next players you want to talk about is Rodney Hood.
Hood, yes, let's get the Hood. Let me click up his page.
What's there not to say about Hood right now, right?
Well, Hood's a funny one because he had a rough beginning. So I'm going to actually go back and look for some filtering here. Okay, let's just look at from March 1st on. So he's been able to play in those 16 games from March 1st on, shooting 49.4% from the floor and 37.5% from three, which is great compared to his, you know, overall season stats. I think for the season, it was 41 and 35. Yeah, 41.6 and 35.4. But if you just look at the past month, he's gotten that up to 49.4 and 37.5, which is great. 77.8 from free throw line. He should be better than that, and he'll work on that, I'm sure. But yeah, he's been great. He's been averaging 12.4 points in 24 minutes. So bump that up per 36, and you can see just how valuable he's become on offense. We already knew he was a good defensive player, and so now he's able to show what he can do on both sides of the court. And I'm just so excited for his potential. I'm just thrilled beyond belief. I mean, I was excited. People can go back on my Twitter feed on draft night when Hood was still available at like 16, 17. I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, we're going to get Rodney Hood. I can't believe this. And he fell to us. It was great. But you just look at how he's already had, let's see, three games where he's had more than 20 points.
Yeah,
he's had three games where he's had more points. He had another 19-point game. He's shown a lot of confidence late in the year, and it's really. I wonder what Quinn's going to do with that two spot when we have Rodney and Alec fighting for that position. Does he want Rodney to go back to be a sixth man, or does he want Alec to be a sixth man? What happens in free agency because. I would argue that they would need a upgrade at guard, be it point guard or shooting guard, when it comes to free agents. So there's a lot of intrigue with that. But Rodney's been making a great case lately.
And either way you look at it, with Rodney Hood or Alec Burks, either guy gives you a splash off the bench, and depth that you need. And scoring ability that you need. And either one is a comparable scorer slash player in the starting unit to take a load off of Hayward as well. So you can't go wrong either way. Truthfully, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Alec can do playing regular with Rudy. Because the Jazz were such a bad defensive team early in the year. And so Alec's numbers looked as bad as everybody else's. And now everyone's defensive numbers are looking great the past, month or two. Wonder why. And so I'd like to see if Alec can have his climb as much as everybody else's with our new favorite Gobert front court.
I have to agree. One of the things about Alec that we've watched is his ability to guard on ball. He's really good, at least the eye test. he's and what I've seen, he's really good as an on-ball defender in an isolation situation, but he's always struggled mm-hmm. off the ball. And you're right, you throw Rudy Gobert into the mix, you put Alec Burks on the floor, and suddenly that off-the-ball defense may not look so bad anymore.
Yeah, if I'm Alec, I'm watching what Elijah Millsap does on defense.
Yep.
And going, I can do that. Yep. Now, Elijah's great, and Elijah, it actually wouldn't surprise me if he's one of the ones they keep.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Elijah's offensive game is not great at all, but his defense is so good that, you know, he might still find a place for him.
Yep.
This is going to be one exciting draft. I mean, last year was exciting, but this year could be just as exciting depending what happens with that pick, whether they go up or down or if some stud just falls to them at 12.
Right. And there's plenty of options. And I'm hoping whatever future show we have coming up, I don't want to tease it too much, but we're working to have somebody on where we can talk a little college basketball and what that means for the draft and what that might mean for the Jazz coming up. I'm looking forward to that because I want to talk about, we're going to have to start switching gears, and I want to talk about what's there for the Jazz. I really want to know, you know, I mean, there's three or four different options for the Jazz, either trade down, you know, trade up. There's lots of options, but I want to know if they stay at 12 or if they don't, who are those going to be those options for the Jazz that can fit a need for the team? So I'm kind of excited about it.
We have a reader question, not a reader question, listener question.
From who?
From Joey at You Gotta Love It, Baby.
Sweet.
Which NBA team's rosters would you trade the entire Jazz roster for straight up?
Ooh. The first thing that comes to mind is Golden State.
I was going to say the same thing. Well, Golden State. Golden State easily. But now I got to think, what other teams would I actually want to do that?
What about Atlanta?
Yeah, I can do Atlanta if we could lock up some of their free agents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would for Atlanta too.
Okay.
That's probably it though.
Yeah, it's tough because you can almost I could pick a few teams. I could pick apart and say I'll take parts of that team, but I don't know about the whole team.
It's a straight up question, and straight up, I would say the Warriors and the Hawks. I don't know. What about Cleveland? Would you do that?
Part of me says yes. Okay, yes, I will. LeBron James.
Jazz. I feel like the Jazz are going to be a home court advantage team in 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
So yeah, I think I'd do a straight up trade for a team I feel like is going to win a title next year.
And Cleveland might be that team.
Years. Yeah. But beyond that, I don't know. I really like what the Jazz's future looks like.
Yeah, me too. If I don't have to trade anything, I wouldn't at this point in time. And honestly, I'm one of those guys that I'm okay with the Jazz not doing much in the off season, you know, with the draft or even free agency, because I would like to see the current core and roster develop further next year with a full mm-hmm. roster, with people able to play. How many more games do the Jazz win next year? And you're right. The future looks so, so promising and so good for the Jazz, even as constituted. You add one more player down the road that can make that difference even more. Great. So.
Yeah. Yay.
Anything else?
About a bit for sports.
Okay.
I just finished watching Better Call Saul, which is a terrific new show. It's the spinoff of Breaking Bad.
Okay.
And it's just as good as Breaking Bad, quite honestly. It's a different vein of the show. It has a different feel, but it has the same feel at the same time. And I'm really, really enjoying it. I just think Vince Gilligan is just a terrific creator, and can't wait for season two. I'm glad season two is already coming.
What's the storyline?
Better Call Saul is a prequel. You didn't watch Breaking Bad, did you?
I have not yet. Keyword is yet.
Okay, so Breaking Bad happened for 5 years, and if you haven't watched it, I won't spoil it for you. Well, you probably know everything. But in Breaking Bad, around season two, you have this lawyer showed up called Saul Goodman, and he's you know, a shady but effective lawyer. And so Better Call Saul is a prequel. It shows us what he was doing a few years before the events of Breaking Bad take place. And so when we meet him, his name isn't even Saul Goodman. His name is Jimmy McGill. And you just kind of watch him as this struggling lawyer, and you kind of get the beginning of an idea of what kind of person he was and what events eventually led him into the kind of person he is by the time he shows up on Breaking Bad.
Is this another AMC show then?
Yes.
Okay.
AMC is one of my favorite channels for cable dramas.
There's a few cable dramas from AMC I have to go back to. I've heard a great deal about Mad Men as well. And
yeah,
Breaking...
Mad Men's good. And Mad Men is one that I'm glad... I don't know how effective it would be binge watching.
Really?
Because, I mean, Mad Men ages. Mad Men started in 1960, and now we're in the last season. And I haven't watched the premiere yet, but I think we're in 1970 now. And there's something to be said about watching characters for a few weeks and then coming back to them and seeing them age, and they're kind of aging with you.
Right.
That makes sense. So I've enjoyed the fact that I was on board with it its first season and have just been following it that way.
Okay. Note to self, don't binge watch Mad Men then.
Yeah, I don't know how it would be, because the first season is very strange, because it's one of those shows where it might not feel like it has a plot, but it does. There's just a lot of subtext to it.
Okay.
It's just a different kind of show. And I really like it. I like Mad Men. And then what else is on AMC? Walking Dead just wrapped up.
Yep. And I need to watch that one too.
Yeah, can't wait for the next season of that. It's been going some really interesting places. And, you know, Walking Dead, it's one of those where it wasn't that great the first couple of years. But once it got to the climax with the governor, then I think it's just been great ever since.
You have me on House of Cards. I'm still in season one. I'm halfway through it.
I couldn't remember which one I told you to binge watch.
Yes, it was House of Cards.
Yeah, I've got a couple more to go on season three. And, you know, I overall I'm liking it, but there are a couple things it does that just really stretch credulity.
Yeah.
You know, there's things in all seasons where, you know, it's not that believable, but by the time he gets to where he is in season three and some of the things they do and some of the things that happen with foreign policy, that's where it really kind of starts to, okay, you're really, really going melodramatic here.
Well, and I'm right, like I said, I'm in the middle of season one. I'm right smack dab in the middle of the back and forth with the teachers union rep. Episode I finished, the union rep decked Underwood in the office after that nice little back and forth that they had. I don't want to make our podcast adult oriented, so I have to sway away from what actually took place in that particular episode. But still, but I'm just finished that episode off, and you and I had this conversation over Twitter, and I love Underwood's character, and I hate him. It's total love hate right now.
Yep.
And you know who's very underrated through all of this? Robin Wright. His wife. Yeah. She's brilliant through this whole thing too. And her whole side story through this whole series so far, I've enjoyed it as well. She's amazing.
That's one thing I really like about House of Cards. The acting is great, but I like how they're written too, in that they are a couple, they're equal partners. And they both have their own goals and agendas. And, you know, he can't really do it without her. And they just kind of, they have their own unique arrangement and relationship.
Yeah. In fact, the last episode I watched, the one previous to the one I just finished with, his former Secret Service man that was protecting him that's in the hospital, he called her in and told her, he's like, I really don't like the way Underwood treats you and everything like that. But then that's when she opened up and basically told him the relationship that she has. And so you start to understand the relationship between husband and wife through this. They're more business partners than anything. They love each other, but they both have agendas to fulfill separately that work so well together to make it, to make each other succeed. So.
Yep. And anyone listening who likes House of Cards, I would also recommend hunting down a show called Boss. It aired on Stars. It was only on for 2 seasons, which bummed me out. I thought it should have had more, but it starred Kelsey Grammer as the corrupt mayor of Chicago. And he was ruthless in that show.
It was called Boss? Really
Boss.
Okay. All right. I'll have to look that one up too. There you have it, folks. Look up Boss. If you like House of Cards, look for Boss. So.
Hey, do we have any Star Wars news over the past couple weeks?
The latest news I'm seeing is they plan to release the new trailer during the opening panel of Star Wars Celebration on the 16th. With Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams. And there have been details leaked about what that trailer could be about. Nothing solid yet. But also we're going to see our first movie poster released at Celebration as well.
Oh.
So that's there hasn't been much news aside from that. The standalone movie Rogue One that they are bringing out, they have been told to not talk about until after summer because of an ongoing dispute that they have with Paramount and Mission Impossible 4 because of the naming. So
the Rogue Nation.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're not going to talk about the standalone until after the summer comes around. Doesn't mean that we fans won't, but that's all the news I'm seeing so far. So.
Okay. Glad you said something because I will try to avoid any leaks on what is in the trailer before I actually get to see the trailer.
I've actually seen some already. They were very vague, but intriguing. But yes, I would avoid it for now. I would suspect, too, that the trailer, according to one release that I've heard the last couple of days on a podcast, actually our friends over at Podcast 66, they quoted the French Disney website in talking about that the trailer would be released previous to Age of Ultron, which is coming out, mind you, next month at this time. But also they're talking about the trailer and this particular panel at Star Wars Celebration being released in 35 theaters worldwide on the 16th of April. I'm kind of got mixed feelings about it. I would suspect, though, that if that'll happen, you'll likely see the trailer hit YouTube and hit the official Star Wars YouTube channel sometime that day or the next day anyway, just because you can't control people from putting out bootleg versions. So watch for it. It's probably going to hit the scene there on about the 16th or 17th of this month. We'll see a trailer that will probably allude to the movie a little more.
All right, just looking at the site, and it's one of those that automatically plays music. So I'm not going to hang out on the site. Oh, I hate when I do that.
What were you looking up?
Oh, I was just clicking on casting rumors because I think I saw that Ben Mendelsohn is going to be in the standalone.
Yes.
I couldn't remember if it was the standalone.
Yes.
Is it the standalone?
Yes, it is a standalone, and he's rumored. Again, my friends at Podcast 66 quoted him in a recent interview with EW, that he came out and said, Lucasfilm has not approached me. That's about all he said, but he did talk about his excitement for the movies and his excitement for the Star Wars universe. And looking further into it, it would indicate that the rumor is probably true. He just toted around that question because he wasn't asked. It was his agent that was asked.
Well, for those who don't know who Ben Mendelsohn is, there's a show on Netflix called Bloodline that just started. It has Kyle Chandler in it, but it also has Ben Mendelsohn. And I watched the first two episodes, and he's really good in it. So.
He was also in Dark Knight Rises.
Who's in Dark Knight Rises?
It's slipping my memory.
Probably.
It's slipping my memory. He was, oh my gosh. I have to go back and watch it, and I can't remember what part he played.
I'll be honest, I only watched Dark Knight Rises once, and I liked it, but it also kind of felt like a slog, and overall, I was just like, well, it says he played someone named Daggett.
Yes. Daggett, and apparently Daggett's an important part in the Batman universe. I still don't know. But it was brief in the movie. It wasn't very long. In fact, I can't remember anyway. So yeah, he's been in that. And then you're right, he's in Bloodline, which has also now been added to my Netflix viewing watch list because I want to watch it. So...
Hey, tying back to sports, did you watch any of the Final Four?
The championship game. That's it.
Yeah. I watched part of the Duke-Wisconsin game, and, I felt like a scout because who knows, Frank Kaminsky is going to be in that range. Sam Decker might be in that range. Justice Winslow, who knows?
Kaminsky's so good.
Yeah.
I like watching him. Guy's got range, and he's deceptively, he's not quick, but he blew by guys almost with ease and just with a smoothness. So we don't want to get too much into the Final Four because our producer has some pent-up anger for Duke and for his Notre Dame Fighting Irish not being there. And he's looking at me because he's not going to say something because he'll just totally go off.
Yeah, we're not going there.
he vented it on Twitter. It was good enough. And
wow.
Yeah. I'm still getting that look, so I better leave that one right there. I am surprised that Wisconsin lost the way they did last night. I'm a little disappointed in the referee's late game calling, but that said, I'm also disappointed because I thought Kaminsky should have taken over that game a lot sooner than just the final stretch. So...
Well, I think
we gotta wrap it up. All right. Okay. We want to thank you all for listening to another episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. It's been a fun episode this week. We've had lots to talk about. As you can see, we'll answer questions. So if you have a question, drop us a line, either the show at Jedi and Germs, myself at Jedi Zog, or John at Germs Guy. Drop us a question, anything you want us to talk about. As you can see, we'll gladly go over it and respond to it and give you our thoughts. Also, you can find us on Stitcher and iTunes. Please, please leave us reviews. Rate us and continue to download and listen to us. We appreciate it. Our downloads have been through the roof for the last couple of weeks, and we do appreciate all of you listening, especially, you know, those who have been with us from day one and those who are coming around. So we want to thank you all. And can't always end an episode without thanking our ever, ever patient producer, Devin Masters at Torn by Devin. Appreciate you helping to make this show what it is. We want to thank you all for listening. Good night. John, your turn to take us out.
Bye, everybody.
Sweet.